Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Tech Connect podcast. I'm John Martin.
And I'm Dean Riverman.
Dean, we got some... We're typically a tech positive.
We are tech positive. Podcast. Yes.
You know, I mean, obviously, we're in a tech industry and talk a lot about technology. We always have our tech connectings.
Yes, yes.
We're usually pretty excited about technology. But every now and then, we get some beefs with technology.
Yes.
We've done this before. I think it's
been
a couple
years. I don't
think
we're immune to, like, everybody, right? Everybody's got beefs around some of the technology that has been infiltrating our lives.
Exactly. You know. It's not perfect. Sometimes it's you know, it's got some bugs and flaws.
Some serious issues along the way.
Some issues that annoy us. Yes. So we're getting back into some tech beefs again today.
I like it. Are we going to talk about AI at all? I don't have any AI related.
I don't honestly either. I feel
no
like,
way.
But I feel like AI is too early in the whatever it is.
Well, I've got a little
to have the beefs about it. I mean, other than maybe that I'm just tired of the fact that everyone's talking about AI. But, like, you know, I get like an email from like the Postal Service saying AI can now do this.
Well, I was just, you know, the commentary is that we've every episode we have had to talk about AI in some way.
Maybe there's a way we'll.
Okay. Well, no, I'm glad that we're not really talking about AI. We got tech beefs.
We don't have to, right?
But we don't have to focus in on AI around it.
Exactly. So instead, today, you and I are going to talk about the things in technology that annoy us.
Yes.
That perplex us.
Or, you know,
want to see improved.
Technology has advanced and then it's created some issues.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. There you go. There you go.
Well, some of mine are related to that.
All right. But we will wrap up the show with our usual tech connecting. Oh, yes. A little more on the positive side.
Absolutely.
At that point. But before that, we're going to get beefy. We're going to vent some frustrations. So if stick around. Feel free to send in your tech beefs with us. We got some fun stuff for today. It's time to plug in and get connected.
Welcome to the Tech Connect podcast. It's time to get connected.
All right, Dean, let's start, man. Let's get into this. I'll let you kick it off. Give me your first tech beef.
Okay.
That you want to vent about today.
Do you remember it's very serendipitous that you're handing this off to me. Do you remember Where's the Beef from Wendy's, the commercial? Where's the Beef?
A classic commercial.
Classic. Yeah. So my tech beef is actually Wendy's, who's considering surge pricing for fast food.
Yes.
This is where technology has just gone amok.
Yep.
People are using technology in a way that, if you ask me, it really shouldn't be used for, and that would be surge pricing. So, in early February, Kirk Tanner, the CEO of president of Wendy's, shared with Analysis his various plans to increase company profits, including investing in digital menu boards, which is good. I am fond of investing in digital menu boards. That's where I was born out of in this industry.
Yeah,
I'm
good
with
for
that.
Us too. Yeah.
But that will have the capacity to display dynamic pricing that fluctuates throughout the day by 2025. Quote,
right.
We are planning to invest approximately $20 million in rolling out digital menu boards across blah, 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 blah. And then Wendy's will invest an additional $10 million over 2 years to enhance its global system to help upsell and improve order accuracy and blah, 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 blah. Okay, so here, look. I get
a lot of blah blahs in there.
The pros of surge pricing that they're saying, or dynamic pricing, I guess that's a softer way of saying it, is around profits and revenue. That's why I wanted to read the quote, right? That why is Wendy's doing it? Well, because it's going to be profitable. But some of the cons are big, right? Perception of unfairness, can't do comparison shopping. And let me just give you one use case. Have you ever traveled in the family car on vacation somewhere?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, like, it's an annual thing for the Riverman family. We hop in the Roadster and we go on down to Florida. 10-hour drive, 11-hour drive, whatever.
Right.
You're driving along and it's lunchtime.
Right.
And you need to get consensus in the car about where you're going to go to lunch.
Never
right?
easy to do.
Never easy to do. But if you do get that glimmer of consensus, and by the way, a lot of times for us, it is Wendy's that will go there. Now you pull off to the side, and what happens? every single restaurant along the drive is packed.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
So now with surge pricing, not only am I going to have the wonderful experience of having to go into a packed restaurant, but I'm going to be paying a premium for those foods that I
need. Or is it that you're going to be paying less because they're busier?
No. Oh, well, no. They're going to raise the price to, because it's a supply and demand thing.
Like, I thought maybe they'd be like trying to charge more like late at night because they want to get more profits when not as many people are there.
Okay.
That would make more sense. Well, frankly.
My use case was I can totally expect that if I go up to a place that's jammed, they're probably going to raise the prices to unjam themselves, right? Like if this was a $3 burger, great. Well, what if it's $6? Are you still going to stay in line for that $6?
That just doesn't make any sense to me.
I'm going to move on. It's like the surge pricing with Uber.
Right.
I mean,
which I know causes its own problems.
I mean, if you're at a concert and you and 10,000 of your best friends are trying to order an Uber, surge pricing, it goes up to the highest bidder.
Right.
That's what's going to happen here with the food. So are you happy about that? I'm not happy about that.
No.
If I go to Wendy's, I know what the price of a burger is. I don't want this surprise sticker shock that, just because you've got digital menu boards that you can now charge me $6 for that burger.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah,
man.
It's a bizarre concept.
It feels weird. And so that's what I'm saying. The cons are perception of unfairness.
Yes.
Yeah, right? I mean, if you pulled into that and you are expecting to pay, I don't know, a burger's got to be in the $3 range, right? $4, $5 at a Wendy's, and it's $10.
Right,
you know, I mean, I would be like, well, that's not fair. You guys are, plus,
I feel like, especially when it comes to fast food, like there's always an expectation that you're paying less, you know, because of it being fast food.
Right.
Most fast food joints have dollar menus of some sort, although I know a lot of those have gotten rid of that kind of stuff too. But can you imagine, like, if what's normally on the dollar menu, like say a junior bacon cheeseburger, that was always on the dollar. But suddenly during surge pricing, it's like the $3 menu for some reason. Like, is that what they're going to change? Like, I don't know.
Something different. You were thinking that late night they could dynamically adjust their price up to get more profitability because there's less being sold.
Exactly. Which I feel like Wendy's, because when this thing came out and everybody started blowing up about it and went all over the internet, obviously.
Yeah.
They were trying to backpedal and backtrack and suggest that they weren't doing what people were suggesting they were doing. Mm. I don't know if that was what they were trying. I don't know. I didn't get too far into it. I was just like, whatever. Like, you know, you've clearly stepped in a landmine here. And good luck trying to fix this one. But that was the only, because to me, that was the only way that it made sense to me. It's like, why would you want to try to charge more? I guess to your point, though, the idea of like, well, we can't support this many people. So if we can turn some people away because it's going to be too expensive for them.
Yeah.
Just still is brainless to me, because let's say that person does that and they're just like, oh, I guess now Wendy's burgers are $6. I'm never going to Wendy's again.
Right.
How do they find out that is not the norm?
The normal price.
That was just the case during that
time. This is fair. Yeah.
But I get it, at least during which is probably why this is a stupid idea to begin with, because again,
that's right.
You know, especially if people are on a budget or they care about how much they pay for something and they start comparison shopping, they start paying attention. Like, you know, again, like if you go to somewhere and this is the price that you see something, well, guess what? That is now the price for that for all time. As far as you're concerned, if you don't ever go there again, that's always going to be what the price is to you. So why would you go back? You know,
Well, I guess, but the inverse that you're arguing now is true. Like, if I go to Wendy's at a surge price, when they're, whatever, have dynamic high price, $10 for a burger, eeks, no, I'm going someplace else. Price set at $10 I come back months later and it's $5. Well, now maybe I think that's a deal. You know,
maybe I thought it was a $10 burger. I don't know.
But anyway, I just don't like the concept. And maybe I'm an old fuddy-duddy, but I don't like the concept of dynamic pricing when it comes to restaurants, especially these quick serves and stuff like this. Yep. When I saw this, I think that's why there was such an uproar about this. It's like, come on, dude. Yeah, I know the technology can do that. Right. I know you have the capacity to do it. That doesn't mean you should do it.
You know, it's one thing like when you go to a fine dining establishment and they tell you like, well, today's fish is market price.
That's right. Yeah.
All right. Okay. I get it. Yeah. I understand. You might have to pay dynamic changing prices based on, you know, whatever it costs.
Yeah, red snapper is a little bit more expensive.
Yeah, exactly.
Today.
Yeah. I expect and understand that.
Fair.
But yes, when I'm going to McDonald's or Wendy's or Taco Bell, I don't expect them to be like, hey, you know what? The cost of our preformed patty that got shipped to us in a freezer truck by the box loads It's up today.
It's twice the price today.
No, it's not. I know that's not the case. You know, I know it wasn't harder to get a hold of your square burger today. Come on.
Or what's worse is, I mean, we're conjecturing about a doubling of the price, but maybe even if they just nudged it up 20%.
Right,
you know, the $3 burger is now $3.60.
Right.
Even that would feel unfair. It's like, oh, you're packed. Your service is probably lower because you're so packed, and yet you're going
to
charge
me to pay more to boot.
Just because it's busy. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't like it, man.
Not down with that.
Yeah, I'm not down with it either. All right, so what's your first beef? Where's your beef?
All right, so let's talk about social media here. A concept that I feel is rapidly ending the way social media currently exists.
Okay.
And I don't know exactly what the next iteration is supposed to be. I know we've, you know, TikTok's out there, or Instagram, you know, we're getting more like video-based stuff. But I feel like we are definitely at an inflection point with social media where I think we are changing the guard from what social media was, you know, back in the early days, MySpace, Facebook, the old Twitter, to whatever's going to be next. And I don't know that we know what's going to be next. And that's my beef, is that
you have no roadmap?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know where to go next because I don't know if I'm just reaching the point where I'm too old that I'm not going to be the target audience. Well, I guess in some ways that is obviously the case at this point.
Yes, yes.
But I just don't know what happens next. And I feel like we might be losing something. Even though social media has a lot of ills to a lot that we've learned over the last couple decades. A lot can be wrong about it.
Yeah.
I also feel like there's a lot of potential good to it that is now almost non-existent. And in particular, obviously, I'm thinking Twitter here because Twitter has obviously changed quite drastically over the last few years since it became X and all this. And it was already on a weird slope to begin with, but it's definitely changed where like now, like when I jump into Twitter, I still have it on my phone, don't use it a lot. But when I do, it is almost unrecognizable to me to what it used to be. It's filled with stuff that
it remains the same. If you ask me, it's always been garbage.
Well, okay. I get to that point, but like it's to me, it's filled with like stuff that is no longer stuff that I'm interested in. It's filled with very graphic adult content, which I don't know why like that suddenly become shoved
in your feed,
in everyone's feeds. Like it's not just me. It's like, it's one of those things of like, you know, sometimes you're like, well, what are you doing?
The right.
But it's one of those things you see people complain about all the time. Like, hey, I posted something and like six porn bots suddenly made a response in the response for reason.
Yeah.
So it's stuff like that where I'm just like, it's become nearly unusable. And granted, like you can go to like your following section to just see the people you're following. And that's okay, I guess. But if you're wanting to like, you know, get what's hot and new, like, which is what the algorithm I'm supposed to help you do, that's interminable at this point. Facebook kind of became the same way.
Yeah, you go on Facebook, it's nothing but ad after ad after ad.
Exactly.
In the scroll.
And it's why I'm now like turning away from these platforms, but I'm also kind of like, but I also would like to have something like this still, because in its heyday, I think Twitter was an amazing way to get very of the moment information. Like I remember the one example I remember,
which
most,
it still has that capacity.
It does. Yeah. I just feel like there's so much clutter now that getting to the stuff that you want is much harder than it used to be. But I remember like for some reason, the key example that always stands out to me was when Osama bin Laden was killed. And I remember seeing stuff on Twitter about that before there were official press announcements, before the news was even reporting it yet, White House had put out official stuff about it. There was already hit stuff happening on Twitter and discussion about it where you kind of knew what was going on ahead of time. And I just feel like that's not there anymore. There's no longer, and like I almost feel like anymore when you get on one of these sites, and Twitter being that specific example, you're more of just like catching up to something you already knew and just seeing random opinions and thoughts and whatever fractured nonsense has come out of it, you know, for, you know, reacting to something and not necessarily being the front wave reporting anymore.
Maybe it's the reporting aspect that it's gone away, because the riffraff of reacting is still there.
Oh yeah. The reacting part is never going to go away.
That's never. Yeah. Right.
And I think that's my problem. I think it's because I feel like that's what a lot of social media has become, is just people just reacting to everything.
Yeah, right.
Sharing their opinions.
I don't even know if it's people. It could be bots.
Well, that's a good point,
it could be,
too.
You know,
exactly.
All these places
And maybe that's the point here, is maybe all what's happening with social media speaks more to where we are in our fractured society. And
so what is the answer? So
I don't know.
So Elon tried to go down a path of authenticating people, right? Of making sure that you're actually a real person.
Which clearly has not worked.
Right. But can anybody do that then? So then you're saying that, yeah, I mean, if you can't, I don't know. It's an interesting conundrum.
And I've checked out some of the other stuff. Like I signed up for Blue Sky. I got on there and checked it out. It feels very much just like Twitter, except just doesn't feel as dynamic, doesn't feel as exciting. Mm. There's obviously not as many people there, so that doesn't help either. And I think that's part of it too, is like, you know, Twitter and Facebook were platforms that a large chunk of people were on, even though it wasn't everybody, but like enough people that you feel like you got.
So what's worse is now you have
opinions and ideas.
Well, that's where I was just about to go. What's worse now is that you have these social media platforms that are just further on the edge, or reinforcing.
Trying to tailor to one specific type of.
I mean, truth or I mean, you know, you're only going to sign up for that if you're a supporter.
Yeah, exactly. You've got to be of a certain mindset.
And then you're just going to reinforce this thought, and
they always call it, one of the political podcasts, listen to, the echo chamber.
Yeah, that's
like, where all you're doing is you're just yelling at the people that are yelling back at you, and you're all yelling about the same thing, and it's like, you're not accomplishing anything. Like, you know, like you and I can sit here and like, if we can sit here and scream about prices for Wendy's back and forth each other, but we both agree on it, so it's not accomplishing anything.
Right. Yeah.
We're not the target audience.
So you're saying social media is dead?
I think
maybe.
I
don't know.
We are by the end. I'm gonna make a bold call and say by the end of this decade, most social media platforms that most people have been using for the last couple decades will be essentially non-existent.
Yeah.
I can't see Twitter/X lasting much longer. I don't know that Facebook is going to make it much longer. Like, I think, like, especially like as a generational thing too, like, you know, as the older generations, it might still be propping up some of these are moving on or dying off, you know, like some of these platforms just will have no reason to exist anymore, I think, at that point.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, obviously there's a certain, you were just commenting on Twitter being kind of a news source, which never made sense to me, but certainly a certain generation got their news from Twitter. That's how they did it. Now, today's generation, it's TikTok.
Right.
We've had the statistics where it's a crazy amount of people that get their flipping news from TikTok, which even perplexes me even more.
Right.
But so you're going from 160 characters to a 2-second video, you know, that's, oh my God, whatever. But I don't know. Maybe it's just a commentary on our society
and maybe
little bits of information.
Right. Maybe something new will eventually take its place that is just not something we can understand or fathom at the moment. Like, maybe what we think of as social
media.
Maybe
we drove it into the ground so hard and realized that it's just garbage at the end of the road.
Yeah.
That maybe it just doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
I mean, wouldn't that be nice to say, well, you know what? Social media isn't a very good thing for society.
Right.
You know, despite all the nirvana that was proposed by the original Twitter and Facebook and, you know, executives saying, oh, look at all this good that it can do. True, but the problem is mostly bad kind of came out of it.
I say it was great for connectivity for a very long time until suddenly it became about, all right, well, how can I get angry at people that have an opinion that's slightly different from mine? And I'm not even talking about like political stuff, world events. Like, you can't go onto these platforms today and just say something like, you know what, I think the grass looks beautiful today.
Or yes.
The sky, I love a nice sunny day. Yeah. You will get 50 comments of people saying like, how dare you?
Well, you know, the grass is greener because there's more CO2 in the air.
Yeah, it's like, don't you know that skin cancer is a thing? You know,
that's
like,
right.
How
that's
dare
right.
you like the sun? It's stuff like that where people will just start fights for the sake of starting
fights.
That's why social media.
When I say that it's garbage, that's what I'm referring to. I mean, it's just so much muck. In social media that I've trained myself not to find
something useful is almost impossible. At this point.
I think, well, that's fair. I mean, I'm not on it a lot, so I don't, you know, I find my usage, to your point, less and less and less over time. Yeah. I mean, I maybe log on to Facebook once a week now because I know that I'm going to be served just a bunch of ads I'm in marketing. So I get it. I know why they're trying to get me, but what I'm really there for, I can catch up in about a week.
I got back onto Facebook basically just so I could do marketing activities for us. Cause I had to have a profile in order to do that. And it's funny. Like, I literally, the only person I follow is my wife. I'm just like, yeah, you know, I guess I'd like to see when you're posting pictures of me and my our kid and stuff. You know, that's great. And then like, there's like a couple of like local groups, like, you know, like the school group, you know, my son's school group, for parents of that school, and like the neighborhood group, and that's about it. Yeah. But I'm amazed by how much random stuff I still, like, if I just happen to click my feed, I'm just like, what is all this?
No, that's this algorithm.
What is this garbage?
It's feeding you what you're supposed to, what I know. You know,
and really, and that's just it. Because I'm not active on Facebook, it doesn't know what to give me. So it's just like, all right, well, you live in the Cincinnati area, so here's some sites about old historic Cincinnati. You're a dude, so here's some girls you might want to look at.
Right.
You clicked on something about sports, so here's here's the Yankees game from last night. Maybe. Are you interested in that? Like, that's I do find the algorithm hilarious when it clearly doesn't know anything about you. It's like, all right. All right. What's next to you? What are you beefing about next?
All right. So do you think we still need the penny?
No.
So my beef is...
My son likes them.
And this is a quick one. This is a quick beef. But apparently, when it gets to this point, I think you need to just cut bait and move on.
Yeah.
So the penny, how much do you think it actually costs us to make a penny?
It's more than a penny's worth.
It's three pennies.
Yeah.
It costs 3 pennies to make a penny. So, you know.
Good economic sense right there.
Yeah. So it's actually costing us money. In fact, we spend $93 million a year to produce pennies. And I think that we could all agree that it's not that we want to get rid of that part of the dollar, meaning, so some of the pros and cons, right? Of course, well, if you eliminate it, well, then what's going to happen is everybody's going to round their prices up to the nearest nickel,
right?
Which is fine.
Yeah, always go up, of course.
Because the counter argument to that is, well, some people are going to actually round down as well to the nearest nickel. So,
you know,
inflamists are like, well, no, because prices are going to go up. An amazing 4 cents on anything, you know, but that's your worst case scenario,
right?
But some might actually go down. So I think all those arguments to me are just, it's BS.
Right.
You know, we are so far past the penny, if you ask me, from inflation and all that good stuff.
Yeah.
I think my beef is, again, let's just stop printing the penny. It's not that you can't charge somebody, I guess, but man, do we really still need it? Can we just all round up to the nickel?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So you're on board.
Hell, I'd even go further and take it up.
Oh, you're going to go to a quarter
if you have to. You know, like, I mean, I'm a big advocate for a cashless society to begin with, but I also understand that that's easier said than done because, you know, there's a lot of people that don't have access to banking or apps or credit cards and all that kind of stuff either. Yeah. So cash still needs to exist for a certain swath of people. But to your point, yeah, the penny. Like, I still find it hilarious that, you know, manufacturers and stores and stuff or whatever will still price stuff at like the 99 cent mark. Yeah.
$3.47 a gallon.
Or like
really
47? This is $6.99. There's comedians.
We know,
comedians have done jokes about this. All know that is $7.
Mm-hmm.
We all get it. And yet, because at some point, some social psychologist figured out that like
people
will think that $6.99 is somehow cheaper than $7.
That's it. Yeah.
But you know, even though it's a single penny, I feel like that's half the reason why this stuff still hangs around.
So in order to do this, all merchandisers, all merchants, all manufacturers, anybody who sells anything, you got to round up to the nearest nickel. No more pennies.
You know what we need to have is it needs to be just kind of like how we've talked about RFID and how RFID is starting to become so much more prominent.
Yeah.
In part because Walmart and other major retailers have started demanding it and forced it to be a thing.
There you go.
What if Walmart decides, or like McDonald's or like any of these other the biggest retailers decide like, hey, we're no longer doing pennies. Like, we're no longer going to have pennies in our tills.
That would start it. Yeah.
We're no longer going to price anything other than a rounded 5 cents.
I couldn't agree with you more. And then advocate that everybody just turn in your pennies.
Yeah.
Just go to the bank with your pennies. You don't have to roll them. Just go. And if you want to roll them, great. But just dump them off at the bank. Therefore, we don't have to produce anymore because that would be a massive influx.
Maybe it's a cash exchange program, too, where like you bring in all your pennies and they will round it up to the nearest.
I love it.
Nickel. Quarter, dollar, whatever. Yeah. You know, like, you know, if you bring in, if you have, you know, 612 pennies, they give you $6.15.
There it is.
You know, like, there you go.
And then, you know, all that good copper. What was a penny made out of? I don't even know. Copper, right?
I think it's mostly zinc.
It is zinc.
With like a copper plating, I think.
I was going to say we could melt it down and make pipes out of it or something. I don't know. Because, there's a copper shortage. But anyway. So anyway, that was my tech beef. Let's get into the penny.
All right.
What you got, brother?
So I'm gonna jump over one here because I'm not sure if we're going to have time to get into all these. I want to talk about news articles and paywalls.
Oh.
Because I feel
and
like
this is a beef.
It is. This is a beef I'm going to give a caveat with, which is that I am very much appreciative of journalism, especially good journalism. I'm very much appreciative of the fact that in our internet driven society where everything information's at our fingertips, it is harder than ever for journalism to break through.
Yep.
It is harder than ever for journalists and newspapers and all these other outlets to actually make money.
Yep.
When it's so hard to get information out where people can get information from anywhere or go a billion places and see the same story.
Mm-hmm.
That is my caveat. I'm not in any way advocating for the death of journalism or these people not being able to get paid for the hard work they do.
So we're all on the same page there. Yeah.
However, I also feel like we have now reached like peak, I'm calling it subscriptification. Where everything requires you to subscribe in order to access.
Yes.
And news in particular has become this to me because, you know, I, in my role and as a marketer, there's a lot of times I have to do a lot of research on topics and, you know, find statistics and gather information.
Can I put a subtle tweak to that opinion? Because I agree with you. But where I'm landing is I think you have to pay for what I would call a moderate, well-balanced view, meaning you can go to CNN and Fox News today for free,
right?
But you're going to get slanted, right? But where do you go for unbiased or what I would call moderate or equally weighed, you know, opinions, if you will?
Right.
Anyway, I was just putting a slight tweak on it. And would that be a value? So I do subscribe to two entities that I feel are a little bit more judicial in their approach.
But you're saying you don't even like subscribing to that? My thing is like I don't even like care like what if I mean if you know I agree that there could be more of that and there's you know it's there's a lot of stuff that's on one end versus another sometimes and that can be difficult as well. I'm not even talking about necessarily that. Like if you decide you want just your point of view to be on this certain end, but suddenly you run into paywalls every time you try to get to it.
Mm-hmm.
Like that to me is frustrating.
I see.
But my thing is more of like a, just that, you know, okay, I'll give you an example. The reason why this came up and became a beef for me that I decided I wanted to talk about is a few months back, one of our Tech Bytes episodes, you were talking about MIT's list of like the top.
Yes, 35, whatever.
Yeah, like the top technologies or whatever that were going to make an impact over this year or something like that. And we had a riff about that. Well, that when I saw like when you sent me that article, I was reading through it and I saw that MIT had a newsletter that you could subscribe to called The Download.
Okay.
Which basically every day emails you like a rundown of like interesting tech topics in the world of technology happening.
I see.
And so I subscribed to it. I sent it to my work email. I'm like, hey, this is a great way to find tech connecting topics and stuff. Mm-hmm. Stuff we can riff about and talk about on the podcast. Well, I get that newsletter. And they always have like a feature article too where you can do a little bit of reading.
The rest is paywalls.
Then there'll be a section of like here's like quick hits of a bunch of other topics that we're tracking and interested in.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at them, and some of them will go to sites that are free. Some of them go to sites that are paywalled, and they'll show you like they'll put a little dollar sign next to the link if it's something you're gonna have to pay for.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you can click and you can get one of like three articles for free for the month. Sometimes it's a you know you got to pay to play immediately, but it's stuff like that where I'm like just to like dive into some of these topics. There's like 50 different sites I can potentially go to.
And you got
to
pay everywhere.
And I've got to pay every one of them potentially anywhere from like $5 to $20 bucks a month.
I gotcha.
I'm like, again, you know, I'm already paying stupid amounts of subscriptions for like streaming services to watch television and stuff. Now I got to do it for news.
So where do you think this ends? Because I 100% agree with you. So it is a beef of mine as well.
This is
especially when you tap on something that is clickbaity enough in the sense that, man, this is real. I want to consume this.
Right.
Oh, really?
You get like two paragraphs and suddenly it's like, you know, if you would like to read more,
yes, I would
subscribe, you know, or you get that thing where it's like, here's your one for the month. And then I got to hope that like, especially like, cause this happens sometimes when I've done Tech Byte articles, you know, or like tech connecting stuff where like, I got to be careful that if I keep trying to click on that too many times, I'll reach a point where I can no longer access the article that I wanted to talk about.
That's right.
But now what I will say, if we're looking for potential solutions,
okay,
I will say Apple News has kind of figured this out a little bit.
Whoa. They're one of my biggest tech beasts.
To some extent, but again, you still have to pay for it. If you sign up for like Apple News Plus, which I think is like $15 a month, and mind you, I'm not signed up for it right now, but I got a free subscription at one point. It's one of those things you buy a new Apple device.
Okay.
Like you can have 3 months free of Apple News or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I did that, and I do appreciate that at least with them, I was able to access anything that was paywalled within the Apple News app. And that also did include a lot of sites that otherwise if you went to were paywalled. But the problem with that becomes I have to live within the Apple News app if I want to access this
stuff. I see.
And And while I do like the app to some extent, it's also not the best news aggregator app.
Yeah.
I mean, you can do some customization and make it what you want out of it.
But I see your point. It doesn't have a lot of the,
And again, it gets back to that problem, though. Let's say
you can
get
Vanity Fair and Wall Street Journal and stuff like that.
Let's say I get back to, you know, my problem of I'm doing research for a marketing project.
Yep.
And I'm like, ooh, here's, you know, I wanted to learn about, you know, some statistics about healthcare or something or other, and it's like, go to this page. Great. I click on it. It's paywall. and mind you, me having that access to the Apple News app, even though I could potentially get to that article from there, and maybe I can go search for it and find it and read it from there, I can't just do it on my browser.
Yeah, no.
Like, it's not that simple.
It's a fail.
I can't. There's no connectivity between between that and what Apple's trying to get me to do. And that's then this frustrating.
I got a hack for you. I don't know. I think your hack is you got to act like a student, because don't a lot of these have like free student accounts?
True. So you probably have to have like a .edu email address.
Okay, fine. We'll make one up for you. It's good. Everything's good. We're fine.
I'll start whenever Miles gets into college or something. Or maybe I can. I think technically he has an email for his.
School. Yes. Just start use signing Miles. Up with his stuff. Yes. Yeah. Yes. So, miles at firstgrade.com or .edu.
I think the solution is something like what Apple News is doing, which is to be able to have
that's where I was going in my mind.
I'm fine with paying for it, but give me a place where I can pay a set price and get access to
a wide swath.
60 news sites.
That's where I was just about to go. What's really going to happen is NBC is going to have theirs, CBS is going to have theirs, New York Times will have theirs.
It'll be just like Netflix, Hulu, Prime Video, Paramount, all these where you want to watch something, that's fine. Figure out what service is on and pay for it.
The good old days, back when there weren't these paywalls. And you could go read an article at some, you know, right?
Right.
And they weren't charged.
And again, get it. These people deserve to get paid. They do hard work, and they deserve to get paid for what they do.
Yep.
But we need to figure out a way to make it easier to do that and access all the stuff we need without buying subscriptions to 15 different
websites. Then, it's a beef.
It is. It's beef. All right, what's your next one?
All right, well, I'm going to do two. I got one that's real quick.
Okay.
I don't know. I guess it's a beef. Maybe not. I don't know. And my beef is with millennials. But anyway, the article was around America's favorite beers. And I thought this was utterly fascinating. So, and it gives you the rundown of what millennials, their favorite beers, Gen Xers, and boomers.
Okay.
So the number one beer... I don't think you'll ever guess this. What is the number one beer across, you know, for each of those?
For each one individually?
Yeah. Like, what's the number one beer for boomers?
For boomers, it's probably like Bud Light.
And then Gen X?
I
don't know, right? It's hard.
I don't know,
I'm going to give you the answer because I wouldn't have never guessed this. Guinness is the number one beer for boomers and Gen X.
What?
Exactly my dispositions. I'm like...
Is this a worldwide...
Don't get me wrong. I love me some... Guinness is my favorite... One of my favorite beers. Let's see here. This is U.S. Generation...
Just U.S.
Q4 2023 Consumer Survey.
Interesting.
And then millennials, number one, Heineken. Now, but let me give you some on Heineken. Heineken was number one for millennials, number two for Gen X and boomers. So the number two, basically the number one beer across all generations, is Heineken.
Which I could not tell you the last time I drank a Heineken.
Exactly. So my beef is, I don't know that I'm believing this, because this is a visual capital, we always love these things.
Stuff, yeah.
Yeah. So here's my beef with the millennials. So here's their top six. Heineken, Modelo, Corona, Corona Extra, Corona Light.
I had a suspicion Coronas were going to be high on the list.
And then White Claw. Okay, oh, White Claw is a hard seltzer beeper. Exactly. So there's my beef.
It's barely a drink.
You got to understand what actually a beer is. And it's not three different versions of a Corona. Corona, Corona Extra, Corona Light. I mean, come on. There's your top five right there.
I'm pretty sure if you put...
I think millennials are confused.
If you put those three Coronas in front of me and have me do a blind taste test, I'd be like, they all taste exactly the same. What are you talking about?
Corona.
Yeah.
Put a lime in it, it's going to taste like a Corona.
I mean, this is not a shade on Corona. Like, you know, I think a Corona is great sometimes.
Well, it ranks third across the board all generations. So
interesting.
So again, Heineken was kind of the top. Corona's the number two. And then, for whatever reason, Guinness were Gen X and boomers. I mean, like I said, I think most people like Guinness, but to have it ranked as number one above all these other ones, Sam Adams, Stella, Miller, Budweiser, Coors. I mean, it's above all those.
Interesting.
Yeah. Anyway, so, all right, here's my final tech beef. And I know that you saw this. it's an Amazon fail. The Amazon fail is the Just Walk Out store.
Oh,
did you read the news around this where they're shutting down their stores? The program used to allow customers to skip checkout lines by relying on automated cameras and sensors, right? It is this nirvana. And I was geeky about it. I was too.
Like,
we live
awesome.
In this world. Yeah. Cameras and sensors. And yes, that's the way of the future, right? Oh, I got a camera. I can sense what came off the shelf. Oh, the by its weight. Yeah. By, you know, all this wonderful stuff. And I can just walk out the door because the app knows who I am.
And it'll just scan my cart, know who I am, charge me, and I'm done.
It was 1,000 workers in India that are looking at the video footage and verify. Can you believe this? I mean, when I saw this story, I'm like, it was so deflating. And my beef is, really, man? That's what was going on behind the scenes. You had 1,000 workers in India that were doing video verification of that. And of course, that's not scalable. Why would you think that's scalable? No. How are you going to run all this commerce?
And it's almost a guarantee that you're going to see shrink, that you're going to lose.
Yeah.
You're going to lose out on some profits. Yeah. I mean,
and all they did was move, because this article painted brilliant in this one sentence. The cashiers were simply moved off site to even lower price, you know, thousands of miles away.
And not actually getting to touch the products or scan anything or, you know.
Unbelievable. So they're going to the dash cart, which is good for us because it's going to be scanners and screens. So that's good for our industry.
Yeah.
And, you know, so, okay, we're not going to get the camera sales, but we're going to get the scanner sales and stuff like that. But man, when I saw that it was 1,000 workers from India, I'm like, man, that just was a bubble pop. That was a beef for me. I'm like,
dude? Amazon has had a lot of these interesting science fair projects that have just gone belly up in the last few years.
Yeah.
And granted, there's something to be said for a company that's just trying stuff out to see what happens.
I'm cool with the trying, but you should have been a little bit more on the table about that. I mean, you were painting it. They were deliberately painting it as the nirvana of cameras and sensors.
The next frontier of shopping.
Frontier of shopping. Yeah. AI assisted. Yeah. There's my AI, right? I had to. AI assisted and all that good stuff.
No,
it was 1,000 people sitting there watching video.
Just some schmoes whose job it is to stare at a video and like, is that was that actually beans or was that soup?
Yeah. No, I think he took the donuts actually. So what's your last one?
All right. My last one then is talking a little about healthcare. And I think I've talked about this briefly on the show before, so I'm not going to elaborate too far on this, but I think I'm still amazed by how frustrating and difficult it is for interconnectivity between healthcare entities when it comes to your EMR, when it comes to what you're doing it from one place to another. And again, this is a problem that I'm complaining about living in an area where there's basically, you know, one healthcare system that's dominating most of Northern Kentucky. And I know, you know, in Ohio, there's a couple of similar ones like that too.
Yeah, but there's only two or three.
Yeah, exactly. And there's been efforts like for more competition to happen, you know, and I'm sure that will probably happen at some point. But my point being that even with a kind of a single dominating healthcare entity, there are still enough separate entities that are somehow disconnected from them to make things difficult. And I'll just give you an example. It's for me recently where I had some health stuff where I went to my regular provider, the big healthcare conglomerate in the area, and they recommended me to another one that like has offices like in Ohio and here in Kentucky, but are not part of their overall
network.
Healthcare organization.
Their network,
they're not part of their organization. So like, we recommend you to these folks. And granted, they had the option for me to go to them, but they recommend me to them, I guess, just because they're better at it.
So you go there, and now you got to take all your luggage.
Exactly. So I go there, and these people, like, they don't know me.
Yeah,
so
who are you?
I had to have, like, an interview where I had to explain my medical history,
Lord.
Fill out all these paperwork.
Yeah.
Like, they don't know what medicines I take. And
when
granted,
it's all right on your phone, probably.
This was all very simplistic stuff that, like, for, you know, this procedure was something simplistic enough that there was no inherent danger to that. But for sometimes for people, and again, when I think like, again, outside of this area, I know like in places like New York and Chicago, big cities where they don't have these dominating healthcare organizations and you're nickeling and diming and piecing together 15 different providers for all the various health ailments you have. None of them are speaking to each other.
Right.
They all have like an app. They all have healthcare records, but none of them
can't share.
Communicate in any way.
Yep.
And now suddenly like that can become a serious problem.
Oh yeah.
It can become a problem where maybe like you're taking a medication that if this person doesn't know about it, they're trying to give you another medication or procedure that could have dangerous interactions.
Huge issue.
Yeah. I'm still amazed. And granted, it's probably all part of the larger problem where we have a giant for-profit system of healthcare that makes it impossible for, you know, any kind of, you know, establishment of a you know, a universal, and I know when you say universal healthcare, like, triggers some people, but I'm saying like a universal health record in any way that can follow everyone around to every place that they go. It's just, it's become impossible for that to happen. And I'm still amazed that, you know, we're here in 2024 and we don't seem like we're any closer to anything where I can walk out of one healthcare provider, walk into another, and they give them a quick, you know, QR code or tap with my phone or something, and they have everything they need to know about me in order to make sure that what they're doing is equitable and compatible with my current care.
I agree. I think it's crazy. I don't know that it's because we are in a for-profit. I think it's more around the laws. So we just had an executive healthcare summit, and there's a lot around the laws and protecting
patient
information that makes those are the barriers. Because I think that most health systems are bleeding money. Nobody's making money right now. So they want to, if they could make it that much more efficient for you to walk in the door and boop, they got everything that they need.
Right.
They actually probably want that. They don't want you sitting there getting an interview. I mean, that's just costing them money too.
Right.
So I don't know about that, but I fully concede the point that here we are in 2024. I have an Apple Wallet. Can't I just put all of my digital health record on there? And
like
then,
I've got a great health app.
You walk up and I tap you, and there's all my health information.
Exactly.
Come on, man.
There's ways we could build it where, like, you know, there's consent involved in it or whatever.
Right.
Like, I can pick what I mean, hell, every time I download an app or every time I visit a site, I get like a six questionnaire, you know, of like, you know, do you consent to give us this information?
Right.
Are you okay with sharing this? Do you want to share your location? Do you want to share your contacts?
And that was get a very simple gaming app or something like that. It's like, come on.
Why can't I do that with healthcare? So that's a big beef.
That is a big beef,
and it's
dude.
One I have that a feeling is. That is probably not going to be solved in my lifetime.
No, but you when you think about the literally trillions of dollars that is in our healthcare system, it's like we how can we not figure this out? It is a downfall of our system. There's
really
no doubt about it. But anyway,
all right, that's it. Did you have any extra beefs? You're done.
But I feel a lot better now. I got my beefs off my chest.
I've been compiling this list for a while. Again, you'll notice like. Like I said, we're tech positive.
We are tech positive.
To the point where, like, we don't need, like, you know, we can do a Tech Bites episode every other week if we wanted to.
We could.
Tech Beefs,
yes.
You know, we got to space them out. It's been a couple years since we did our last one. There's not enough stuff that I'm angry about that I could do this on a regular basis. But every now and then, you know, we gotta vent. We gotta
except
get
that
out
surge
there.
Pricing, dude. Anyway,
exactly.
Yeah, right.
All right. So that's what's beefing with us. before we get to a tech connecting and something maybe a little more positive.
Yes.
Big thanks as always to all of our supporters here on the show. Hey, I wanted to give a quick little shout out that we recently were honored to be added to the Canalys to their list of top channel podcasts.
There you go. Yet another award won. Yes.
So we are proud of that. We are thankful to them for adding us to their list this year of top channel podcasts. I mean, we always knew we were top channel.
And thank you, Jay McBain. Yes, absolutely.
But thanks for making it official. We appreciate being added to the list there. And I'll throw a link in the show notes to that so you can check out the full list if you want.
Yep.
Find some other pods maybe you're interested in. That doesn't mean you're allowed to unsubscribe to this one, though. Maybe I shouldn't do that.
Really. Like, we don't want them jumping ship.
The list is
just
one. It's a one-person list, and it's just us. Sorry.
There it is. You know. There it is. There it is.
But thanks to them for doing that. Hey, we need to hear from you, though. You know, if you want a good way to help make sure that we are on a list like this and that people do recognize us, it starts with you. It starts with you rating and reviewing the show, leaving comments for us, subscribing,
sending us a tech beef, right?
Send us your ideas. Think of things that make you agitated or things that you want us to talk about on the show. We're happy to review those. So please get your reviews in. Send your information to us. Go down to the show notes. You'll find all kinds of ways that you can reach out to us. You can submit topic submissions. New t-shirts should be coming soon. Where are we with that?
I don't know, Marco.
We selected our
he doesn't know.
We selected our new logo.
Get them on order.
What's going to look like.
So we'll talk to Angie.
Yeah, we need to ping Angie about that. Start getting some t-shirts printed up and get those out to some folks. But I want to get some out to you that maybe isn't already on the list. So send your ideas into us. We'll get those sent out for you. Send your beefs into us as well. And hey, as always, if you want to stay connected with us, you can always find us on the Blue Star LinkedIn page, or you can email us directly, techconnect@bluestarinc.com. All right, Ian, let's wrap things up. Let's get a little tech connecting here today. something that, again, maybe a little more on the positive side.
Yes.
What's tech connecting with you right now?
So what are some of the most iconic images you have in your mind when you think of the moon landing? Right? You think about the eagle landing. Yeah, you think about the guys the bouncing down, out the step down. Yeah, how about the buggy flag. Ride? The buggy ride,
yeah, the
you
buggy
know?
Ride, the golf.
The golf. Well, okay, so ball. I'm going back to the buggy. NASA selects three companies to submit a design for the moon buggies to be used coming up with the astronauts in the new, you know, the lunar base model, the module they're going to be creating here soon.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They've put it out to bid. Well, they've selected three companies that have... they now can submit these designs, and we'll put a link in because some of the designs you will recognize. It looks very moon buggish, right? Like it doesn't have a roof because there's no weather.
Yeah,
so you don't have to worry about rain and stuff like that. That kind of a stuff. But some of them are pretty cool. But when you look at these conglomerates, then there's some very familiar names, shall we say, that are submitting these designs. So one of them, so it's actually three companies, but these three companies, again, are conglomerates. It's Intuitive Machines, Lunar Outpost, and Venturi Astrolab are the three companies. But when you dive into it, Intuitive Machines, well, that's actually Boeing, Michelin, Northrop Grumman, the Lunar Outpost. Well, that's actually Lockheed Martin, GM, Goodyear.
Makes sense.
And then the last one is actually joined by Axiom Space. Never heard of them. And Odyssey Space Research. So actually, I guess the last people, the Astrolab, that would be the one that's maybe a little bit unique. Anyway, it's about $30 million per unit. They're saying that this is actually about a $4.6 billion contract over 13 years. So, again, ton of money you know, to build. I don't know how many. They're being very opaque about how many actual vehicles they need or any of the kind of the statistics around it. So stay tuned for that. But anyway, we're designing moon buggies again. I mean, like
nothing else, like when we go back to the moon, I look forward to, like, you know, some really more high-tech HD footage.
Yes.
You know, like... I mean, we've been operating off all this grainy old footage from the 60s, you know, like I look forward to...
Yeah, film looking, Zapruder film looking, you know, kind of old.
And then just even more people will suggest that it's all a hoax.
You know. It was a big movie stage.
it was Stanley Kubrick, it supposedly was the one who staged the moon landing.
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
is
that
it?
That's been like the... There's literally a documentary about...
Oh, I need to watch
like,
this.
You know, how people he did think it? that he did this.
Okay,
you
know, all right.
He staged the moon landing and filmed it.
Is that on Netflix or is it somewhere? Okay.
I'm sure it's a streaming service you're going to have to pay for.
So it's connecting with you. Yeah.
Mine's going to be pretty brief here, which is I had some travels over the last week.
Yes.
Took the family to DC.
Yeah.
Went out to a healthcare summit that you mentioned.
Yep.
This was the first time that traveling with the family and all this where did not rent a car.
Oh,
did not really have access to, like, you know, a hotel shuttle or whatever. So we used Lyft.
Okay. Yeah,
You know, we decided to, you know, just and we've been using Lyft off and on over the last year for some travels. Mm-hmm. But we decided, like, hey, this is going to be our first time where we're just anywhere we're going to get to, anything we're going to do, we're going to just
order up
a Lyft and take it. And I gotta say, I was pretty pleased.
Absolutely.
With it. I was pretty happy with the ease of ordering up a car on the app, like being able to pre-schedule if, you know, over a day ahead if you needed an early one.
Welcome to the club. Yes,
yeah,
isn't it
like
nice?
All these
it's very
interesting
nice.
Options that you have, like and I think honestly what's probably my favorite thing about it is the simplicity, not just to order, but then when they get there, you get in. They've already got your destination.
Yep.
You've already put that in.
Yep.
They take you where you need to go, and you just say, thank you very much. You get out.
That's it.
You don't have to worry about transaction. You know, it's all paid for through the app. You can add your tip. You can give them a rating.
It's cool.
You just get out and get
on
with
it. Now,
your
it is on that last point, though, that you need the only thing you need to be worried about in this world is your rating. Because your drivers are rating you.
Yes.
And if you try to submit and the driver sees that you're a low rated person, you're probably not going to get that. So just keep that in mind. You don't, you know.
My thing with that is
I'm
like,
sure you wouldn't.
What are you doing to get yourself a bad rating?
No tip.
Okay, well, sure.
Would probably be at the top.
You probably deserve it at that point, then.
Yeah, and then everything else after that, to me, would be, you know, discretionary. Like, some drivers don't like to be talked to. And, we're all human. We get that. You walk in, you say hi to them.
Exactly.
If they just say a quick hi, boop, that's it.
And that was my policy with it, too.
Or maybe you
get
a Gabby.
Get in the car.
One.
Like, if they wanted to chat with me, fine. I chat with them.
That's right.
If they were just keeping themselves and just going out of the business, fine.
But even in the app, you can say that. You can tell the driver, hey, I don't want to talk.
Set
the temperature
at
this temperature.
Okay.
This is the music I prefer.
Say, I haven't gotten that picky with it. Like,
well, I mean, I'm just saying you can. I think, well, maybe I might be in the Uber app right now. The Lyft one. But yeah, I mean, usually a good driver will say, hey, is there anything you want to listen to? What can I do? And then that's probably pretty much it.
My favorite one, you know, because again, you get to experience a lot of different types of people. And some of them, like you said, don't bother talking to y'all. My favorite one, though, is, so we were in D.C. and it was our last day in D.C. and we decided we were going to go drive up to the Capitol because we'd been on like a trolley tour the day before that kind of takes you to some sites. But we didn't get out of the Capitol that day because we were kind of running late in the day. And it was also the eclipse, too. So we found ourselves a place to kind of, you know, check that out a little bit. So we decided, hey, let's go back to the Capitol because we just wanted to walk around the grounds. It's beautiful there, you know, and we actually ended up getting a random tour of the Capitol, too. But on the drive up there, like our driver was like, oh, you guys going to the Capitol? And we're like, yeah. He's like, did you call your congressman? We're like, no, I didn't give him a call. Mm-hmm. He's like, you should have called your congressman. They could have gotten you a tour set up. Just the whole ride just kept telling us, you know, like, you call your congressman? You should have been calling your congressman. What do you think they're there for? They're supposed to. I'm like, pretty sure they got other things to do.
I didn't know they were a tour guide, but yes, okay.
But apparently, like, yeah, you can call them and they'll send up, you know, an aid ad or something to give you a tour. But we ended up getting one anyway, so it didn't really matter. But, you know, but again, the whole experience I thought was very simple and easy to use. You know, in my mind, I was thinking back to the days of taking like taxis.
Oh, yeah.
And I've always found taxis to be a taxing experience, of getting one, flagging them down. You know, hoping that they drive good, hoping they know where you're going, hoping they, you know, that they understand where you're trying to get to, the payment part of things. And man, it's
and they're
so
taking
much
you the
now.
The right way, the fastest way, not exactly. This, you know.
Well, because my wife and I had an experience once. This was before our son was born. Like we were down in Florida, I think, like in the Disney area, doing Orlando or something. Mm. And one night we wanted to go to downtown Disney, Disney Springs now, we were going to go out to downtown Disney. We ordered up a cab from our hotel, and this guy started taking us
everywhere.
Everywhere
but there.
And you know, at that point, like, you know, like I had it, like, I think I had at least a map app on my phone that I could kind of track. And I was like, I'm kind of like, I'm a little nervous because he's not going anywhere in the direction where we're supposed to be going. And eventually he just dropped us off and just tried to drop us off at some random like plaza, some random like retail plaza that had like a couple restaurants. Yeah. And I'm like, dude, this isn't where we wanted to be. We wanted to go to downtown Disney. And then so then he's like, fine. He's all mad about it. And like, he's calling somebody, I guess, to get directions or something. He gets us there. We get there and I'm kind of like,
now the fares.
Well, at that point I'm like, I'm mad. And he's trying to charge me like, you know, extra fare. And I'm just like, fine, here it is. But I'm not giving you a tip for this. I'm sorry. Like, and this is something I almost never, ever do. But I'm like, you totally botched this.
Yeah.
Well, he got mad and locked the doors on us.
What?
And didn't want to let us out.
No way.
And thankfully someone on the outside was able to open the door from the outside so that we could get out. But like it was a moment. Wow. There was a brief moment where are we going to be on the news tonight? Yeah. Like, is this, you know,
this
like
is going down?
Is something bad about to happen here? That's the kind of. And granted, I know stuff can happen at a Lyft too. But like, that's the kind of stuff where I feel like, again, you don't have to worry as much about that because you have a lot of control over where you're going, and you have a lot of insight into what's happening.
I'm a big fan, and you probably save money, by the way, like renting a car.
Oh yeah,
you rented a car in DC. Oh, forget it.
Definitely saved on that. Yeah, like, you know, even though and prices are up and down with that too. You know, but like I guarantee you, it's a lot less than renting would have been.
Yeah,
so
for sure.
That's what's tech connecting with us.
All right. There you go.
We've cleansed our palate with some beefs. We've got back into some tech we're
positive
about.
Feel so much
about.
Better now, yes.
It is time for us to unplug. So until next time, you know, go tell us what the next social media platform is that we're supposed to be spending time on.
There you go.
Go pay for some news. We're not charging you for this podcast, though, so maybe we should. I don't know.
Yeah, no paywall here.
You know, you throw us a buck and you can listen to our pod. I don't know. And as always, folks, please stay connected. TechConnect Podcast is brought to you by Elo and the 7-inch Elo Pay Integrated Payment POS System. Elo Pay packs all the power you need to run your point of sale, complete with a 7-inch HD touch display, integrated payment, Android 12 OS, and Qualcomm SD660 processor. The compact enterprise-grade terminal delivers the modularity that merchants require. You can dock it to a printer stand, place it on the counter, or integrate it into the Z70 stand. ELOPay offers comprehensive payment services that enable merchants to process transactions with confidence. With access to multiple payment applications, end-to-end encryption, secure tokenization, robust terminal management services, and easy-to-use APIs for quick integration, merchants can get started quickly and securely, allowing their customers to dip, tap, and swipe, our favorite TikTok dance here on the TechConnect podcast, physical cards, or contactless. EloView is certain device management, essential edge enterprise support, and Elo Care Protection. The Elo Pay 7-inch POS system is ready to deliver on your customers' needs. Contact the Blue Star Elo team to learn more.